Hey there, everybody.
Hello.
What's going on? How's everybody doing in endless hell for which there is seemingly no escape?
Yeah, I think everyone's is in a weird period now of like, okay, it's coming fall. People going back to school or kids going back to school, whatever.
Yep. Lining up those kids to die.
it's just figuring out what's happening with everything. My school just closed down all of its residence halls, but not, it had announced like there's going to be online and hybrid classes. So like partially in person, but now a good chunk of the student population can't come back unless they find Brooklyn apartments,
which is easier said than done, I assume.
Oh yeah. As someone who has just moved in, we did it in 2 days, which is insane. We saw a bunch of places, then picked one. And now all these other kids have to find and do the same thing. And all of these real estate brokers are going to be like, well, Jesus Christ.
Oh, God, this is a nightmare. I think the stress is starting to get to me.
Mm.
I had a nightmare about nuclear Armageddon.
Mm.
And it felt like one of those dreams that I sometimes have that can like predict the future, like an omen.
Yeah.
So now I'm worried about the nuke getting dropped on us. That's fun.
Whenever I think about how everything is, my brain, I think it's hardwired because one of two things will happen. Either Losing My Religion by REM will start playing, or just the line, my world's on fire, how about yours? And that's it. That's the only line from Smash Mouth's All Star that will get stuck in my head, and then it'll be done. And it's like, okay, yeah, okay.
Quarantine caused me to develop a weird hyperfixation on the musical Bubble Boy. Like, you remember the Jake Gyllenhaal movie Bubble Boy?
Yeah, I do. I haven't seen it, but I know it, yeah.
Well, the film's writers, Cinco Paul and Ken Dario, who are also the guys who wrote the Despicable Me movies, they made a stage musical adaptation out of it.
Really?
Yeah, and now I've got a fixation on that because it turns out I can relate all too well the feeling of being stuck inside my own home, never to go outside.
What have I been doing? I've been listening to the Magnus Archives. I started watching anime again.
I'm so sorry.
I know. It's time for my funeral. No, my roommates got me into JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which if I'm going to do any of them. Okay, so I have like a legal limit of one anime per year. Last year it was Neon Genesis, and this year it was Cowboy Bebop, and now I'm breaking the law.
Breaking the law.
My brain usually can only handle like one a year, and I have to like go in knowing that I'm going to like it too, you know, or else like I can't do it. But now we're watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which if you don't know that one, the main characters are all huge, like tall, like absurdly buff men, and like nobody else looks like that. Only the named characters do. And do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the you thought your first kiss would have been JoJo, but it was
Dio, right? Yes. Dio's
that's
great.
Literally all I know of that show.
Yeah, have you seen what they look like though?
I've seen what they look like.
If anyone doesn't know what they look like, I highly recommend at least looking at these people is overwhelming, and that's why I like it.
Anime is like one of the like few things that my little brother is interested in. It's like soccer, video games, and anime. Mm-hmm. And he was actually had his wisdom teeth removed. I come in and see him like zonked on the couch watching anime.
Yeah,
I don't even know what it was. It was just nonsense to me.
Yeah, no, it is nonsense. It makes no sense. And I am very ashamed of myself, but it's fine. And this is the hill I guess I'll die on. When I say that I think JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is a fun show to watch.
And I do need to get more anime watching. That's like one of my many major blind spots, as I guess we can call ourselves media critics,
right? Is that what we are? I thought I'm just a dumbass sitting in front of a microphone.
Sitting on the floor of your apartment because you don't have any furniture right now.
So I moved and I now have no furniture other than a bar cart, a few armchairs, and this dresser, which I painted and I'm sitting against. But everything's in disarray, and that's okay. I've been sleeping on floors and chairs for a week and a half, and I'm living my life. Living my life.
It's been an unexpectedly depressing and dour beginning for an episode where we talk about Donald Duck cartoons. Mm. Right?
Yeah. We're talking about, we are talking about war.
War cartoons. Yeah, this episode we're going to be doing something a little bit different from our usual thing. Rather than talk about like one large movie, we're going to be talking about several like shorter movies, usually tied into a different theme, and we're calling it the Short Film Showcase.
Woo!
Not a very original title, we know, but it's the title you get.
It's what it is, so be happy about it.
Yeah. And, you know, this is sort of like an experiment, trying something new, and we're actually curious if you guys like it or not. So, you know, feel free to respond to this. Let us know if you want to see more short film showcases in the future, because we personally want to, but we want to know if you want to hear them. So, you know, you can email us or what have you, or hey, here's an idea. How about you go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the show? You know, that would be very cool. We would appreciate you for it.
Yeah.
Please do that. Please. Please, yeah, we're begging. We're begging.
We would be grateful if you did that. That would be very cool. You know, add us on Twitter, whatever the hell you want to do.
But mainly rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
Please.
So we are at war.
Yeah. So we were trying to figure out what exactly the theme of our first short film showcase should be. We've floated a bunch of different topics that we'll probably get to at some point. Some of them do we disqualify because they don't quite fit our rules yet, like the short films of Tim Burton during his tenure at Disney, which wouldn't have counted because one of them was a made-for-TV short, or the shorts that were initially produced for Fantasia 2006, because a lot of them got direct-to-video releases. But eventually we decide on one that interests us both and fits our rules and honestly probably makes a very interesting discussion. Now, for those of you who are like schooled in Disney history during war will know that after World War II, the U.S. military occupied the Disney studio lot. To date, it is the only time in history a movie studio was occupied by the U.S. military. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they mainly use like the lot as like sheds to like make repairs for military equipment and the like. But also through that, the U.S. government commissioned Disney to make numerous propaganda films, whether they be animated films for the purpose of training members of the army or public information films for Canada and South America, or propaganda films about why Americans should pay their income taxes, because, you know, taxes fight the Axis.
Yeah. And a lot of these propaganda cartoons, most of them were of Donald.
Probably the most famous of the Disney World War two propaganda cartoons are two that mainly center around life in Nazi Germany. The Donald Duck short Der Fuhrer's Face, which was an Academy Award winner, and then there was the far more serious and very grim Education for Death. But we're not talking about those because, you know, I feel like those have been already been talked to death, right?
Yeah, and I think those ones were a little different from this little kind of continuous series of Donald shorts, right?
Yeah, so essentially around this time, Donald Duck had taken over the role from Mickey Mouse as like the everyman working class hero sort. You know, he was just the average guy going about his day and, you know, his thing, one bad thing that happened ever, and his temper would blow off the handle. And people liked that. That was relatable to them, especially since Mickey Mouse had gone from, you know, Weizsäcker hero to, let's face it, a mascot.
Yeah. And it really worked because he became the face of it, because you can't really imagine Goofy or Mickey wanting to go to war, because the entire thing is that Donald wants to, you know.
So with Donald Duck as the everyman and, you know, wanting to make films to entertain the folks at home that would relate to the common guy's experiences, for six separate short films, Donald Duck actually served in World War II, not in the Navy, as the sailor suit might have you expect, but in the U.S. Army. And all six of these shorts were directed by Jack King. Many of them had stories by either Jack Hanna or Carl Barks or both. And do we want to talk about like who these guys were? Jack King in particular,
yeah, totally. Was like
the guy who, the main Donald Duck guy during that time period up until his like retirement, the retirement of Disney producing short films. And then King's himself retirement from animation in 59. And King actually has had quite a very interesting career. Started out as an animator at Disney and then goes on to a bit to Leon Schelzner's studio at, you know, Termite Terrace to make like Looney Tunes shorts. Like, you know, many of them of characters that you don't care about before, like Buddy or Ham and X, but also, you know, some Porky Pig shorts back when Porky Pig was a big star before he'd end up getting upstaged by, you know, Daffy Duck and then later Bugs Bunny. But then eventually he goes back to the Disney studio and ends up becoming a director of for Disney shorts, but mainly the Donald Duck series. You know, that's like his big thing. And then Jack Han and Carl Barks were part of Disney's story department, and they did stories and like gag work for a lot of the Donald Duck cartoons, among others. Jack Hanna would actually later go on to become a director of Donald Duck shorts.
Yeah.
During like later period Donald Duck, while Carl Barks became like the Donald Duck comics guy, like, you know, the good duck artist was his nickname. And, you know, legendary work in both like the Donald Duck and Scrooge McDuck comics that later influences, you know, the works of Don Rosa. And then that influences, you know, the DuckTales series and, you know, the Donald Duck comics are really part of what makes Donald so big in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all three of these guys very much helped shape Donald Duck into who he was today.
Yeah, Donald wouldn't be who he is if it wasn't for these cartoons, I also don't think. I think.
Are you talking the Army one specifically, or?
I think so. I mean, like, they're kind of the amalgamation of, you know, prior to this, he was just kind of like the, you know, angry duck in a sailor costume who was next to, you know, Goofy and Mickey and whatever.
I mean, Donald already had his own solo series of shorts by this point.
Yeah. But I think these just really help distinguish him, like, maybe not like at that time in particular, but like it going on from that, you know.
It definitely did codify him as like, you know, the sort of like the, I guess you could argue like the image of
mm-hmm. the average American citizen during World War II, if like home front mm-hmm. shorts, like Donald's tire trouble, but yeah. also for those serving in the U.S. military, like a yeah. lot of Donald Duck iconography placed on military yeah. vehicles around that time. If you bother to yeah. look that up.
I have a, my grandfather had served in the Air Force and Donald Duck was his favorite, you know? And I think that's in part, because of just the association with like, you know, oh, American pride, blah, 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 you know, whatever. And I think that, for that generation, at least, that's a very, tied together thing. From my experience, that's what I've seen, you know?
Mm.
And so like he was just cemented as a favorite of that generation.
What do you think it is that makes Donald Duck so endearing to people?
I think it's that because he's I guess prone to, you know, whatever life throws at him, but he's also kind of quick to anger. But I think also in these ones, he's more of a trickster than the typical Donald, like, you know, how he does his little yell and he shakes his fists and stuff like that. Does he do that like at all in these?
I don't think so, actually.
And I think that's what's really interesting about it, because like, you know, he's known for that. And then here he's like,
he's more like, of a bumbler really in these.
Yeah, it's like he's setting them aside for the American cause, whatever you want to call it.
I think it's worth noting that technically these aren't propaganda films per mm-hmm. se. Like,
no.
To the best of my knowledge, like these ones weren't commissioned by the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
They're more propaganda adjacent.
So these ones are really interesting because Donald gets drafted in particular, which is the first of this little series of them.
Do you want to list off all of the shorts that we're talking about? I don't think we have yet.
Yeah. So we're talking about Donald gets drafted, The Vanishing Private, Sky Trooper, Fall Out, Fall In, The Old Army Game, and Commando Duck.
And these were produced and released in 1942 and 1943. So, you know, it'd been pretty much right after mm-hmm. Pearl Harbor for the most part. Oh, and 1944 was the last one, Commando Duck.
Yeah. But, and so, like, I think that you can't really call them, like, total propaganda because the story was in part written by a guy who wanted to include, like, some anti-military sentiment in there. Karl Barks
yeah. was, you know, an isolationist, you know, stay out mm-hmm. of the war, which yeah. history doesn't look too kindly on those yeah. types in regards to World War II.
Yeah.
Apart from Commando Duck, which is probably like the closest to being mm-hmm. like straight propaganda, and we'll get to Commando Duck. Yeah. For the most yeah. part, these are like more satires of life in the U.S. military.
Yeah, and how it's like blown up to be like this, like, what's the song?
The Army's not the Army anymore.
The Army's not the Army anymore. It's better than it's ever been before. The bugler blows, I can't get him up at quarter after seven. But if you're tired, stay right there and sleep until 11.
Yeah, it's...
which was written by Karl Barks and also with music by Leigh Harlan. Mm. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce that, but you probably best know him for writing many of the songs for Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and mm. Pinocchio. So, you know, Whistle While You Work, mm-hmm. Hi-Ho, When You Wish Upon a Star, that was all him. And
yeah.
I think the closest in terms of DNA that the Army's not the Army anymore matches to is Der Fuhrer's Faith from the yeah. show of the same name.
When Der Fuhrer says he is the master race, the higher, right in Der Fuhrer's face. Not to love Der Fuhrer is a great disgrace. So the higher, right in Der Fuhrer's face.
Yeah.
I think it's not uncontroversial to say that Der Fuhrer's face is the better son.
Yeah.
Because both of them are good sons, but Der Fuhrer's face both has a lot more potency in regards on the who the target actually is. Not that the U.S. Army, you know, doesn't deserve a ribbing, but in the context of the time period, the Nazis absolutely deserved it more. And also the fact that on its own, Der Fuhrer's face works as a son more than the Army's not the Army anymore. Like, the Army's not the Army anymore. The joke of it is only, like, made clear in the context of the actual short, while Der Fuhrer's face, like, there's jokes actually in the song itself.
Is this Nazi land so good? Would you leave it if you could? Yeah, this Nazi land is good. We would leave it if we could.
And so when you just listen to it independent of the rest of the short, it's, you know, it still works as a song. The only downside is that Der Fuhrer's face is a lot more awkward to be caught humming under your breath.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You have a little explaining on that one, you know?
Actually, fun fact, that's actually, the song actually for Der Fuhrer's face actually came out before the cartoon short itself.
Really?
A cover recorded by comedian and musician Spike Jonze. Mm-hmm. And that single ended up becoming such a huge hit before the film's release that the film was, its title was changed before release from Donald Duck in Nazi Land to Der Fuhrer's Face, and was like marketed as the cartoon that the hit song comes from.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It's worth noting that none of these shorts, as to the best of my knowledge, you can watch currently on Disney Plus.
No, I checked all of them. They're not there.
Yeah. Which is,
they might be, they might be like, it, like mentioned or something like that in various things, but them themselves are not there in full.
As far as I know, the most recent re-releases of these shorts are on two of like the Walt Disney Treasures DVD sets, the Chronological Donald Volume 2, and then On the Front Lines, which is like an entire collection of all of Disney's World War II propaganda material.
These were 15 and 16 years ago, respectively. So since then,
I believe they're long out of print, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
I want to look up how much an On the Front Lines DVD set would cost now. Yeah, if you want to get like the On the Front Lines DVD set, that's going to cost you like that's going to cost you, if you want to get it new, it'll cost you $90 and used $50.
Yeah.
And that's just on Amazon. I haven't even looked on eBay yet. Honestly, whatever happened to those Walt Disney Treasures DVD set? I mean, I know what happened. It's that home media
disappeared,
died out in favor of, you know, of, you know, streaming. Which is why they stopped with those Looney Tunes box sets.
Yeah.
After, like, Volume 3.
I remember I had one or two of those.
Speaking of Looney Tunes, these shorts actually make, like, an interesting contrast of, like, the other World War II propaganda that the other animation studios were putting out at the time. Because, because even though, like, the Warner Brothers stuff is, like, a reputation of being, like, more subversive than Disney stuff, as far as the best of my knowledge, like, none of them came to, like, outright satirizing the military like these Donald Duck shorts do.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're all largely pretty much critical, rah, 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 USA, USA. Like, for instance, in the Bugs Bunny short, Super Rabbit, that ends with a final joke of Bugs Bunny heading up the cave to become a real Superman and then signs up for the U.S. Marines.
Yeah.
Like, only one I can really think of off the top of my head that would really, like, fit is Daffy gets drafted. And even then, the joke isn't, you know, on the military. It's on Daffy for being such a coward that he's doing everything in his power to try to dodge the draft.
What are the, I guess, the parallels of the, at least the Daffy ones and the Donald ones? Because I know they have very similar names. Like, there's a a Commando Daffy one. I don't remember the exact name, but it has Commando in the title. Like, they have, like, some of them have corresponding titles.
I believe, from what I recall, the Commando Daffy one has Daffy serving the European theater and, like, fighting Nazis.
Wow. Yeah, no, I know in that one, he's like, he's just kind of playing pranks on the Germans, on this one particular German guy.
Schultz!
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think doesn't he also like club Hitler with a hammer?
I believe so.
A mallet?
So they're a little bit more straightforward. I think.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the one Commando duck that shows that actually has a Donald in armed combat, most of them are, you know, just mainly like him with like the mundanities of military life. The one that shows Donald in armed combat, Commando Duck, is centered around him in the Pacific Theater, which means lots of racist Japanese caricatures.
Oh, yeah. Hooray. Yeah, there's, yeah.
Yeah. Oof. And I mean, all of the students at the time were absolutely guilty of this.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't make it any less comfortable to watch. And
oh, no.
Commando Duck is probably my least favorite of these shorts, primarily for that reason. The thing is that with these shorts, oftentimes you'd see a greater amount of anti-Japanese sentiment than, you know, anti-Nazi or anti-Italian fascist sentiment. You definitely saw those too, justifiably, of course, is that, you know, the Japanese were the ones who bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah,
so
it was a direct attack against America.
By the U.S.'s then perception at the time, we had more of like a personal vendetta with the Japanese than we did with, you know, the Nazis or the Italian fascists, which, and I know, in case one of you listened, like, some smartass mentioned, like, all the atrocities that the Japanese military committed in World War II. Absolutely, they did. But that's not why they had those racist caricatures in those shorts. Don't be purposefully dense.
It's just not okay.
Yeah.
It was just seen as okay because it was used as a tool to,
for the war.
For the war.
But it wasn't.
Yeah. Especially here when a lot of them are supposed to be like more satirical too, it feels a little bit worse, because it's not even like Donald's having a bad time for a lot of this, and like it's not even like a straightforward like here is like the enemy, and you know it's even worse.
And then even then, like, the jokes are just lame and lazy.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying, like, they're any good. They're bad. They're bad on every level.
Yeah, like just a weak material, like weak, obvious material. Like, oh, they're overly polite. Oh, they deliberately go for shooting in the back. Ha, ha, ha. Funny. Yeah. Laugh riot.
Great job. Yeah.
Yeah. Commando Duck is absolutely the worst of these six, and also coincidentally or not, the one that's least critical of, you know, the military system or the military industrial complex, whatever you call it. It's pretty much,
you're right, Donald goes on a mission, and
it's like we said before that these shorts are largely propaganda adjacent rather than straight up propaganda. This one is the closest, if not, it goes Commando Duck. Goes all the way to like straight up propaganda.
You're right. This one just kind of is.
Yeah. But for the most part, these shorts primarily, as we said before, deal with like Donald Duck just going through the mundanities and miseries of military life. And I think that starts off with this, and it starts off with Donald gets drafted, which, you know, features, you know, Donald getting drafted. And he sees like all these propaganda posters about how great military life is.
About hot women in airplanes.
Yep.
That's it. And he goes, I want to do this. And then they give him the physical exam, which kind of like beats him down.
It's like very invasive. And then he goes into basic training with Drill Sergeant Pete. Even Pete in here seems like tamed down. Like usually he's like a villainous character in these like older stories, but here he's less outright villainous and more just like a comic foil for Donald. You know, he's, like the stooge, if you will.
Yeah. It's interesting because he has the place here in a lot of these shorts in the Daffy ones that like German soldiers have, you know,
or like, Japanese in the more racist Looney Tunes.
Yeah, I'm going more so on talking about the Daffy Commando one, but like, they stand in for the exact same like in comedic timing anyway, you know, like the and so that's really interesting that the in these ones in the beginning it's the the US sergeant, but I think that's why people liked them, you know, because it felt very I feel like that was a very, you know, American sentiment of like, haha, it's like very tongue in cheek, you know.
For the same time, you know, he's doing his duty.
Gotta exactly. He's USA, doing it.
USA.
He's doing USA. It. He's not succumbing to authority figures, you know. He's like, you know, he's the everyman because he does it himself. The do it yourself attitude, you know.
I think watching these shorts, I finally fully understand what Francois Truffaut meant when he said that there's no truly anti-war film, because even though these are largely outright satires of the military, that many of them were like penned by an outright isolationist who didn't want to be involved in the war. You still like feel like this patriotic urge, like you want to see Donald Duck become a good soldier. And like, you know, I mean, you know, part of this is because you know what kind of monsters that the U.S. Army would be facing in World War II, even if they didn't quite know yet at the time. Though how much the U.S. government actually knew is very contested, especially as of late.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you see Donald Duck just wanting to do his best, and he was bumbling through it instead of like laughing at the military industrial complex. You're just like, oh, I want you to be better, Donald. Sort of like, have you seen Dr. Strangelove?
Yeah. It's been like, a while, though.
Like, even though you know that, like, Major Khan is flying the bomb that's going to, like, end the world, at the same time, you can't help but get a little bit into it as they're, like, being gunned down, like, flying their way, and that like an army march occurs, and like they're all just so determined to make their payload that, you know, you can't help, you find yourself rooting for them like a little bit. And I don't know if that says anything about like the nature of cinema or the our natures, but
I think in these, in the Donald Duck ones, it's the fact that he does cry that helps a lot. I think that was a very active choice that was made. The fact that not only does he want to fly an airplane, but instead of having like an angry outburst like he normally would, he's crying as he's peeling potatoes into the shapes of little airplanes, because really just wants to fly an airplane.
We forgot to mention that Donald, his initial ambition to join the military, that he like wants to fly an airplane in the war. I don't think he ever gets to do that in any of these shorts.
No.
Mostly becomes like a paratrooper.
Yeah. But he never gets to, but like he has like a, not just like a goal, but like a dream, because, you know, he's like literally like crying about it and shit. And like, you're like, it makes you feel for him whether you want to or not, you know. You're like, oh, poor Donald, you know. He's cute and adorable, and you've reduced this like angry like this character known for his anger into tears, you know. And that, I feel like, says something. That says a lot, actually. I think that is like the peak example of why these were so effective and why Donald was kind of the perfect choice, because they kind of broke him down in a way, you know?
Yeah. I think if we're going to like divide these shorts into like categories, Commando Duck is the one that's like outright propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
Donald gets drafted, Sky Trooper and Fallen are more like the military satires. And then like The Vanishing Private and The Old Army Game are outright farces.
Yeah. The Old Army Game is the one where he holds a gun to his head.
Yeah. Like, Donald thinks he's gotten cut in half because his bottom half fell into a hole.
Yeah.
And so he ends up trying to commit suicide with using Pete's gun.
Yeah. I thought it was supposed to be like a joke, as in like he knows that he's not, but he's trying to trick Pete.
No, he genuinely believed, both of them genuinely believed that he's been like cut in half. Like,
yeah.
And he's like split second between going, yes, no.
It's really dark.
Weirdly grim.
It's very grim.
It's also interesting watching these shorts in comparison to, like, the Looney Tunes ones and seeing, like, the difference in, like, style of comedy. Like, because, you know, the Looney Tunes, they more revolved around, like, quick movement and quick timing and a lot of verbal jokes as well. While the Disney shorts, they're more fluid in their movements and timing and more of, like, goofy visual gags rather than, like, outright cartoon violence.
Yeah.
And even, like, if I'd say so myself, a bit looser on the animation. Like, I'm thinking of, like, in terms of, say, Fallout Fall In, with, like, those shots of, like, sleep-deprived Donald.
Yeah.
And he just looks like an absolute wreck. Which, by the way, if we're looking at, like, a modern parallel to those shorts, you remember that episode of Ren and Stimpy in the Army Now? Where Ren Stimpy joined the military. That episode reminds me a lot of these like Donald Duck shorts.
Mm-hmm. If,
you know, exaggerated to an outright demented degree.
Oh yeah.
Like they have a similar parallel, like the hard ass sergeant, you know, the the focus more on like basic training and the mundanities of military life rather than actual combat. We both agree that Commando Duck was the weakest of all of them.
Not only was it weak, but it was just bad.
Yeah. But of all of the others besides Commando Duck, which one do you think fits in Thieves the least? I feel like it's The Vanishing Private, because that one is just more blatantly absurd. In this like central conceit, like Donald wreaking havoc with invisible paint.
Yeah.
Like you don't really need like an army scenario for that. You could have, you know?
For me, it was The Old Army Game, to be honest, because it felt like you could kind of put it it was another one where you could kind of put it in any scenario. Like it could have been like a babysitter and the kid they're babysitting kind of, you know.
I guess, but at least,
you know?
At least, you know, like soldiers going on unapproved leave, like in the middle of the night is, you know, something that actually like happens in the military. I doubt like an empty storage room with a magical paint that turns things invisible is something that actually is in the military's arsenal. Like, if even, especially at, like, what, the 1940s?
All right, so if you're wondering why there was that brief little interruption there, essentially what happened is that we've had to record this episode in two separate sessions. The first one recorded on July 30th, and the second record on July 31st because Amanda recently moved in to her new apartment, as we mentioned earlier, and she has no internet, and resulting technical snafus ensue.
I'm currently not even in my own place right now. I'm currently at my friend's place because of the internet thing. And we also don't have any way to do laundry because we never received things to do laundry. So we're doing laundry at a friend's place right now. And we have no internet, and we're trying.
Anyway.
So
please forgive us if we end up repeating ourselves. We'll try not to, and we'll try to fix any like such instances in the edit. So where we left off, I was, you know, we were talking about how the Vanishing Private and the Old Army game are like more in terms of like outright farce rather than satire or propaganda.
Right.
And before things went to hell, you were starting to talk about why the Old Army game is your favorite of these six shorts. So you want to get into that?
I think I like the Old Army game the best out of them because it seems like the most like not far removed, but in a way it is. I think it's the most standalone out of them as like a thing, you know, like the I mean, the scenario is you know, Donald's sneaking out and stuff like that. And I don't know. It just seems like the most like simple in concept of like this. It can be applied to kind of like any scenario or a lot of different scenarios like it. And I don't know. It felt that they had a lot of free space to, you know, with those kinds of jokes and stuff like that, to just kind of do what they want without like making like without making it any bigger than it like had to be, you know.
I see what you're saying. I think my personal favorite of these shorts is probably Fallout Fall In.
That one's
mainly
because good.
Like it isn't removed like from the realities of military life. Like it feels like I like how these shorts you know, convey the sort of like everyday mundane frustrations of military life in that time period. And I think Fallout Fallen is like the best example of it. Like, with all of the trudging. They don't establish in that short if it's just like a practice march, like at like a US based base camp, training camp, or if they're already like overseas in either the European or Pacific theater.
You know, I think that one's a good one as a representative of like what these are like exactly. But I like the Old Army game just like as its own thing. I think Fallout Fall In is like is a really good example of the of like in the context of what these like the series is, you know. I think the Old Army game is I think has some of the most fun with what it's doing, but is again kind of removed from the like you can remove it from the context. So yeah, but I think as a stand of you know, representing these all together, I think you're right. Fallout Fall In might be the best one.
Couple stray thoughts I was having before you like wraps this up. It's interesting how this particular war in this particular era is really the only time you like see widespread military cartoons like involving cartoon characters serving in the military, apart from like stuff based on like military based toy lines like G.I. Joe and stuff. I'm talking about like everyday wacky gag cartoon characters like serving the army and fighting the US's military enemies. Like World War One, that was like before the rise of, you know, the animated film. Like it's still like the real early days of film. And then, but every war after this, you don't really see that. Like you don't see Donald Duck serving the Korean War or Vietnam. Can you imagine the political minefield that would be?
Which is funny because he wasn't let out of, he was officially, what's the word?
Honorably discharged. Yeah, I was going to mention
honorably,
this.
Honorably discharged. He wasn't honorably discharged until 84, which is really funny.
Okay, so 1984 was the year of Donald Duck's 50th birthday, and Disney had like a whole bunch of publicity stunt for that year. So one of them was the city of Torrens had, or at least had at the time, an annual Armed Forces Day celebration and parade. And coincidentally, that year being honored at the parade was the U.S. Army. So for that year, they held an official honorable discharge ceremony for Donald Duck. So they like had a guy in like the Donald Duck mascot suit at the parks, dressed down in like own custom fitted army gear. There's a whole bunch of photos of that online. If I'll try to post that on the Twitter when this episode comes out. And so Lieutenant General Arthur E. Brown Jr., then director of the Army staff, presided over the ceremony. And along with the honorable discharge, they gave him a promotion to Buck Sergeant. So officially, Donald Duck is Army Buck Sergeant Donald Duck.
Interesting.
So yeah. It's a weird, weird, goofy, vaguely sinister thing that occurred as a publicity stunt.
Yeah. So do you think that he did serve in other wars, but just didn't publicly?
I imagine he was in the reserves, but I doubt they were having like drafting Donald Duck for Vietnam at that point. He had like nephews to take care of.
Yeah.
Speaking of Vietnam, some of these shorts, particularly like Donald's interaction with Drill Sergeant Pete, gave me some like Full Metal Jacket vibes. I'm half expecting these shorts to turn out with like Donald Duck maniacally cleaning and repairing a gun in the head and then shoots Pete in the gut.
Yeah, he...
Come out, Joker!
A lot of them get pretty like brutal. At moments, where like Pete or Donald look like they're going to like actually kill each other.
There's a lot of reckless gun usage, particularly in the first short. Donald gets drafted, which like ends with like a Donald like an out of control hail of bullet fire.
Yeah, there's a lot of near death.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how in most of them they're not even like out there fighting yet, they're just kind of like doing whatever. And still.
Yeah, like, as we said before, only one of these shorts actually has Donald in armed combat.
Yeah. And that's it. All of them are just about, like, kind of daily life in the army. And I think that's why they work so much. I think that if you put Donald Duck, like, in that scenario, they'd be a little bit too grim, you know? Then you're leaning into, I think it would be leaning more into, like, I don't know how to describe it other than Warner Brothers territory. You know, it doesn't seem like Disney could pull it off in a way.
I mean, we already know they can't pull it off. Like Commando Duck, which was terrible.
Yeah.
Hell, the Warner Brothers stuff was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, not the anti-Nazi stuff, the anti-Japanese stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Daffy, like clobbering Adolf Hitler with a mallet. That will always be good. Funny.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm mad we didn't get to see Donald fuck up some Nazis in any of these shows.
Yeah. Donald Duck. Yeah. Can we see Donald Duck punch a Nazi?
I think it's our just duty. In fact, any of our followers who like have any art skills, you wanted to like draw us like Donald Duck punching a Nazi in the face, your choice could be like 1940s World War II Nazi, could be like a modern day Richard Spencer type Nazi, any kind of Nazi you want, just draw Donald punching him and send it to us, and we'll put it on our Twitter.
Sad that we still have those around.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we do need to send Donald Duck and Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to, like, fuck up some new Nazis with cartoon shenanigans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Please. That would be the dream. I know it would never happen, but, like, God, it would be the dream. Yeah.
Do you think any of the other Disney cartoon characters would have worked well in a World War II setting besides Donald, like, say, Mickey Mouse or Goofy?
No, I don't think so. I think, like, if you had them doing, like, really minuscule stuff that wasn't, like, exactly, like, in it, you know, but, like, on the sidelines, you know?
Like, on the, like, home front?
On the home front, exactly. Like, in the factories or something like that, you know? Something of that sort, where it was like, oh, yep, and it was still, like, a little thing for the wartime propaganda shit, but, you know, you can't have... I think you could have done, I feel like there could have been, like, hear me out on this one. I think Chip and Dale could have worked, in that regard, because they are, I feel like there's enough gags with that, you know, because they're tiny.
I mean, and Chip and Dale could have absolutely fucked up some Nazis. They are some wily rapscallions.
Exactly. I think...
Were Chip and Dale even in existence by that point?
Let me see real quick.
Oh, hey, I'm looking this up right now. Chip and Dale actually first appear in a World War II cartoon short.
Which one?
Private Pluto, which has, like, Pluto as a guard dog on a military base.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, you know, Chip and Dale are saboteurs in that one. They're using a cannon to store the nuts.
You know, they're sabotaging
military equipment, making it easier for that damn Axis.
I'm thinking more of, like, the Rescue Rangers style Chip and Dale, you know, like somewhere in between there. But instead of, like, you know, mystery solvers, they're like detectives. And
I mean, Chip is modeled after Indiana Jones in that cartoon. He'd
probably
get a punch in some Nazis. Dale was Magnum P.I., and I think Magnum P.I. served in Nam, but who knows, those Nam skills could have carried over in the art of Nazi fighting.
Oh, yeah. I think they could have. But that's my opinion. I think they would have worked pretty well.
I'm surprised they never did, like, any, like, Minnie Mouse and Daisy Duck as Rosie the Riveter style shorts. You know, like, like those Mickey, Donald, Goofy team up shorts. I think the only World War II cartoon that they had Minnie in was, like, one about how you should save your bacon fat and, like, give it to the military so they can, like, use it to make weapons.
I think that I think Disney doesn't have enough, like, at least, like, female characters with, like, you know, I guess,
quirks
and stuff. Like, I can't imagine Minnie Mouse getting her shoes dirty, you know? Like, and I mean,
Minnie Mouse back then, sure, but, like, if we're talking about Paul Rudish and Minnie Mouse, they have to mine some comedy out of that.
But those are the 2010s. I'm talking about 40s. Minnie. Yeah.
They should have, though. That would have been a great way to boost morale.
Yeah. I think having Minnie, like, take off her shoes and put on some overalls or something like that.
Why do you go for shoes? Shoes are probably the least iconic thing about Minnie Mouse. It would be the bow, right?
Like
a work bandana.
Yeah. I don't know. I just meant, like, everything about her outfit is very pristine and... You know,
I guess.
Yeah.
So is that all we got to say about these shorts?
I think so. Their legacy was pretty, like, you know, did they work?
I think they did the job they were meant to do.
Yeah.
Do they stand the test of time? Apart from Commando Duck, which. Sucked then, it sucks now. I'd say they largely, like, hold up as, like, time capsules of, like, this particular era of American history.
Yeah.
Should they? I don't think they'd be relevant enough for like the average viewer of like who just wants to casually watch the Mickey Mouse short. Mm-hmm. I think they're more like in terms of the historian minded, which is why we really need Disney to get off their ass and like make some Blu-ray sets of those shorts. Or mm-hmm. if they can't be bothered doing it themselves, at least license it out to another company who'll do it, like mm-hmm. an Arrow Video or a Shout Factory.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was our first ever short film showcase. I think that went as reasonably well as it could have given our technical limitations.
Yeah.
We'd like to do more in the future, but before we do, we'd like to know if you'd want to hear more.
So, let us know if you do, like what, I guess, categories y'all would be interested in, because there's so many.
We could do like Donald Duck on the home front with Donald's tire trouble or... Yeah. We've got a whole bunch of ideas of like short film showcases that we could do. So
let us know.
Email us, tweet us, please, for the love of God, rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts. We'd very much appreciate it.
Yeah, that'd be great. And thank you for listening to us. Encourage Donald Duck and you folks out there to punch Nazis.
Yeah, fuck Nazis. Fuck them right in the air.
Yep.
Well, I'm Dan Agatone.
I'm the other one.
Signing off.
See ya.
Next time on Lost in the Vault.
He talks to animals.
That's right.
He flies. The girls are crazy about him. And so are the fishermen.
The one who catches him gets to keep him.
It's Jasper, the million-dollar gnome. Join the happy return of the little people. Walt Disney's classic fantasy, The Gnome-mobile, rated G.
Well, you made it this far, so I guess you like our show. Want to support it? Check us out at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or simply go to our website at anchor.fm/lostinthevault. You can also follow us on Twitter at LostVaultCast and Instagram at LostVaultPodcast. You can also email us at lostinthevaultpodcast@gmail.com or join the official Discord, link in the episode description. And also,